Welcome back to the next edition of the On The Bounce Show. Now, so much has happened since we last chatted. The Bulls, the mighty, mighty Bulls, for some reason I didn't back last week and I feel terrible about, they downed Leinster. So they get a home final this weekend against Glasgow, and that is just an exciting thing to get into. The Bucks will be playing before them on Saturday against the Welsh with a very strong team named by Russi. US Open golf was incredible. Bryson DeChambeau continues to become an absolute powerhouse in the game, while Rory went full Proteas on the Sunday. Speaking of the Proteas, they tried to lose to Nepal. Like, so many people don't even know they play cricket, and the Proteas almost lost to them. Anyway, we've got the Super 8s to look forward to in that, where they can hopefully redeem themselves. And in the UFC, UFC 303 officially in the toilet because Conor McGregor's got some sort of unspecified injury. This poor Michael Chandler guy cannot catch a break. But I tell you where all the UFC eyes are right now is UFC 305, because Dricus du Plessis, he has confirmed to take on Israel Adesanya. Now, Adesanya, he's taking a bit of a break. He says he's really confident to come back and take heads. But clearly this guy doesn't know much about geography, because this fight's going to be taking place in Perth, which is basically another South African city. And on that weekend, the Wallabies will be hosting the Springboks. It can't be any more in Dricus's favour. So let's get into that. This intro has been far too long already. Into studio with my man Sandile and I.
Trust me, guys, I've not made a bad call on the show yet.
For sure.
So I've not made a call, bad call yet. So, guys, go big or go home. These are certified winners. We've given you all the logistics and why they will win earlier in the show, so back us.
Okay, so I'll work. Before we wrap it up, I'm going to scrutinize two of those calls.
Which ones?
Poland, Lewandowski's not playing.
Trust me.
Okay. Croatia, they're going to beat Spain?
Yep.
Okay, well.
Luka Modric.
Sandile, lovely to have you back in studio. Lovely to be here after a big weekend.
Big weekend, humble pie weekend, Ben. So I know I'm going to owe a lot of people a lot of apologies on this one.
Never apologize.
You win some and you lose some.
I mean, are you talking about the fact that Croatia didn't beat Spain?
Are we going straight into that one? Okay, cool, guys. Yes, I made a huge call that you should just trust me on the Spain game. And congratulations to Spain. And I think just going straight into it, I think Spain is going to be my surprise package in the Euros. Just coming off that performance, it was quite clinical. So I'm really happy on that. And we should probably move on and discuss Germany. Absolute masterclass. Yeah. Toni Kroos show. But I was so impressed at how great they were with their young guns, Havertz, Wirtz, and Musiala. Musiala, I always get that wrong. Great, great, great win, 5-1. I didn't expect it to be that clinical. They were clinical.
Really, even against Scottish? Even against it being Scotland?
Look, I've learned not to just count anybody out. That's what we did with Leinster, but we'll get back to that. But Germany played amazingly. Who I was really shocked at and I wanted a little bit more from was England. I think just the 1-0 wasn't great, but, you know, you got to win them. Those were my early Euro discussions. I'm happy with those picks for now.
Well, I mean, since you've gone straight into it, yeah. Just to recap on the Euros for the first round, there was no real shock surprises. I mean, I know Belgium lost.
Wow, that was what I was going to say.
We said it last week. I mean, they're like the Proteas of international football. There's always so much hope. They were talking a big game about being rejuvenated and all this kind of stuff. Yeah,
that was
I know
bad.
They had two disallowed goals.
Yep.
But ultimately, they lost. They lost the opening game.
Yeah, it was.
There was no other real surprises. I mean, the other surprise being Albania scoring like straight away against Italy.
Of course. And
which is fun, but I mean, it wasn't a big deal at the end of the day.
I think just to touch on the Belgium one, I really didn't think they were going to be this bad off the jump. So that was shocking. But I think Italy, I had them as a firm number two. But now with that, you know, leaky defense, which is never an Italian thing to do, to have a leaky defense.
Yeah.
They were below average. And I've got a bit of a scare for France now with Kylian Mbappe and his broken nose. You know, he's definitely missing the next game. So, you know, and he's the leader. He's the captain.
Does that mean he's going to wear one of those weird masks?
He's out for the next game.
Really?
He doesn't jam in the next game. So we hope that, you know, they've got a lot of depth. So we hope that, you know, they come through. So my early predictions have been thrown off, but I've got Germany now. I've got Germany now. That machine is well-oiled, and I really think that depth and the way Toni Kroos is is playing, and also with a whole bunch of young guys coming through those ranks. Very happy with Germany. So, guys, I'm not going to say trust me on this one, but trust me on the Germany call, I promise.
Okay, well, fair enough. I mean, everyone's allowed to make a couple of calls that might go a bit left or right, okay? And always have confidence, because the thing is, people pick up on confidence. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not the biggest football fan as you are, so my interest is a lot more superficial.
Sweet.
I've got a feeling. Do you reckon Portugal could be a dark horse? And wait, before I push you for an answer,
oof.
You watch Portugal, yeah. All eyes are on Ronaldo, but he's not their best player.
No, no.
Let's be honest. But I think there's almost something like quite cool about the fact that he draws so much attention.
That's a great call.
While other Oaks can then thrive around him. As long as they can internally deal with his hissy fits from here and there, I reckon they could be dark horses.
You're right. They could be dark horses. And obviously, you know, the one thing about about Portugal is that they really play for Ronaldo and they play for themselves. So I like that call as a dark horse. A cheeky dark horse. And a cheeky dark horse. Is that
CDH.
is that I really have, which is weird, and I watched the Netherlands game. I think Netherlands could make a little bit of noise moving through into the next round. So I have them, you know, slowly watching them and Spain in the back of my mind saying, could this actually be something shocking? I know the Spain one shouldn't be that shocking, but with the amount of great teams in it, because we know England at some point chokes, I think those two, I actually like them as a dark horse.
Well, I mean, look, you make that call about the Netherlands, they've got a chance straight away to show they've got something because their next game is against France Friday at 9.
I've got to also give a Man United legend, Weghorst. He scored that winning goal for the Netherlands. Shout out Man United legend. That was interesting. And there have been so many interesting picks in this Euros that we didn't initially count on. You know, we all went for England because of, you know, their firepower. But Spain, Netherlands, Italy, you know, even though, you know, they may be big names, we always are backing England because of just what they have on paper. But I like those dark horses coming through.
Just going back to Portugal there quickly, we spoke about Ronaldo. Yeah. I'm amazed that Pepe is still playing.
Oh,
Pepe's 41.
41 years old and tackling like a prime 22-year-old.
If you Google Pepe, you'll get a picture, which I'm pretty sure is an old photo. But again, strikes me that I probably looked like that when he was 16.
That's probably a photo from the media day. That's how crazy he's been looked.
But talk about continuity. At 41, you can still get into that team because it's not like it's a team that they need the stars. I mean, exactly. There's depth in Portuguese football.
100%.
And there he is, 41, stalwart. But there's that word again.
Shout out to stalwart. This is the third time he said it on the show. I think he's just an awesome, you know, advocate for Portugal football. And he's actually still good at that position. You know, he can tackle. Just the red cards and the aggression. But that you do need some strength like that in a very tough Euro competition. So Pepe, at the tender age of 41, guys, you can live your dreams until the day you want to retire. I mean, that's the big story about Pepe for me.
I mean, Pepe's got like 6 years on you, doesn't he? Like, you
it's way to throw my age out there, Ben.
Okay, look, I mean, look, so we've got a really great weekend ahead for these games. You know, we spoke about the Netherlands-France game probably being like the one for the weekend.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've just got the completely the wrong screen here. I'm getting all excited. If you've noticed, I'm in a Bulls jersey for the show here. I felt so bad about not calling them last week that I thought, you know, humble pie, wear the colors. But there's another thing about the studio is that because there's so much high tech in here, it's cold. So here I am.
Little chill.
Little chilled here, little chillers. Getting a bit of a... if this studio was like 4 degrees,
it would be a little bit better.
Okay, so... The other game that I'm really excited about for this weekend is Poland versus Austria. I think Austria, again, I wouldn't go as far as calling them dark horses, but that's pretty cool. We've got Georgia, Czechia.
When? Czechoslovakia. Czech Republic.
But when have they started being called Czechia?
I don't know. I think we need to correct ourselves on that one.
Saturday, we've got Turkey versus Portugal.
Yeah.
And then Belgium versus Romania.
And Romania... So, 3-0 winners, first game.
Yeah, that's the other thing I want to chat to you about there. So Romania, again, like, this is the great thing about these big tournaments, that all our eyes are on the teams we've already mentioned.
Yeah.
But then you get, like, these stubborn teams on the side. I'm not going to call them fringe because it sounds disparaging.
Yeah.
But these Oaks, I mean, this is the highlight of their lives, to get to the European champs like this and play.
And
Turkey looked pretty good in their first game.
Yeah, and you know when you talked about Poland initially, Lewandowski gets back for this round, hopefully. So that's going to be interesting for them.
Mm-hmm.
Romania, you know, I have them, and we'll probably talk about it later, I have them probably losing the next game against Belgium. But for some reason, I've got a feeling that Romania are going to pull it out the back. You know, I think with that form of the first game and now a true belief in them. And yeah, man, I think that's exciting. And like you were saying, you know, a lot of people had them as pure underdogs, thought they were just going to sweep right through them. They now have got the biggest goal difference in that group. So it's,
yeah, goal difference counts so much when things get tight.
Exactly. So it's going to be exciting. And this is, for me, sad times for Belgium because this is the last time. They probably run out altogether. People like Kevin De Bruyne, people like Lukaku. You know, I think this is the last one for Kevin De Bruyne. So I'm hoping that they bring it back. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Okay, hopes are quite medium there. So, I mean, we've got to talk about the US Open golf, not just because I love golf, but like I was getting all excited about the fact that it was being played at Pinehurst number 2, and that golf course did not disappoint over the weekend. It humbled those oaks properly. There were certain runoff areas where it was game over. I think if I had to go play that golf course, any of us had to go play that golf course, it'd probably take us like 8 hours to finish there.
Guys, I want to tell you. I want to tell you how great Ben is at golf. We're going to get into it at some point. So when he says that, he could probably just go pick up golf clubs and go play.
It's because I care. It's because I focus on it. I'm about as good as golf as Andile is at paddle.
Oh, wow.
So there was something so great about that final round. Okay, yeah. We knew there was only about two or three guys that could possibly win it. Scotty Scheffler, unfortunately, didn't feature at all. He just never got out of the blocks. And that golf course, you can't exactly go chase scores.
Yeah.
So that round started with Bryson DeChambeau in the mix. He had a 3-shot lead. Mm-hmm. Incredible, because he just had no fear in that golf course.
Yeah.
Ludvig Åberg, okay, we know this oak's the future. Mm-hmm. But you can see when he was playing against Bryson on the Saturday, he went into his shell.
Yeah.
You're playing against a larger-than-life, big dick-swinging kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Hectic.
And it's hard to like match that.
Yeah.
Because people don't really match Bryson for distance off the tee.
Cool.
But there's going to be times where you're so tired of watching this, so crush it. So he fell away. Rory McIlroy was 3 shots back, and Patrick Cantlay was in the mix too. Yeah. Okay, so you kind of knew it was only going to be those three guys. Tony Finau made a bit of a run, but then it got tight, and then it got close, and then Rory had a 2-shot lead.
Yeah.
But then something happened, golf fans, that I think all of us, if we ever play competitive golf, happens. I don't want to use the C word just yet because the Proteas have trademarked that. But let's just say Rory got a bit tight. And at 15th hole, he had an uncharacteristic low kind of ball flight into a par 3 where you cannot go long.
Yeah.
Simply you cannot. Put the pin here, long is bogey. And he hit this weak little 7-9 middle trajectory in over the back, made bogey. So suddenly he's back.
It's tight again for him.
Then he misses a tiny putt on the 16th. I think the stat was like on tour he holed his previous 496 three-footers.
Yeah.
He missed that. 17 misses the green. 18, he's got another three-footer. He misses that again.
Yeah.
It's pure theater, but you can't help but feel the soak is now just dying inside.
Yeah, he looked terrible at the post, but we'll speak about that when you're done.
And then while this is happening, Bryson wasn't exactly great shakes himself. He couldn't find the fairway. He kept playing from the rough, which is treacherous, but he somehow managed to find lies. And then when it came down to it, miracle shot for the ages out of the bunker, taps it in. Bryson is now the US Open champion for the second time.
Yeah.
The aftermath of that is like Bryson's the biggest hero, Rory's the biggest choker. Rory just straight in the car afterwards, didn't hang around.
I want to ask you about that before we move too far ahead. And there's something about me with Rory. Sometimes he tends to come across as a bad loser because he should have shook some hands after the game. He shouldn't have gone straight into the car. What is your opinion about that? You know, I think you should carry yourself with a certain amount of class, even when you come second.
Completely agree. So that's the answer. Yeah. You got to carry yourself with some class. But because sport is entertainment and sport is theater, kind of like we did actually. So, okay, look, this is just me, right? I'm all about the stories.
Right.
And he should have been there. Like Bryson lost the PGA chance by 1 shot and he was right there to shake Xander Schauffele's hand.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough. He was at the driving range because there might have been a playoff. Rory knew it was done.
And he just walked away back into the Lexus. We saw that.
He walked away to his car with the full swing film crew behind him, which is the ultimate like final nail.
And just zoomed off.
So there's footage that's going to be on Full Swing the next season on Netflix of him going out there. And there was a bit of a tire screech, which didn't help. He subsequently has put a statement out over social media where he said, first and foremost, well done to Bryson, didn't go my way. I feel like I'm getting closer. I'm taking a few weeks off, all that kind of stuff. But you need to be in the flesh to say that. I think if you really want to be a contender, this is what worries me about Rory. Mm. If you really want to be a contender, you can't act like that. And you simply aren't intimidating any of your competitors when you have the simpy approach.
Yeah.
Most of Tiger Woods' career, he won because people were shit scared of him. Now, when people see Rory in contention, He's the guy that got in the car and drove off.
Exactly.
He's the guy that didn't face the press. So his aura is lower now as a result.
Yeah. Do you think it takes away from, you know, the legacy of being a true champion because he walks away, but when he wins, everybody must stick around? And also, do you think it takes away from him being the face now of, you know, golf, because he was a big face of golf and stuff like this mars, you know, your legacy moving forward? And I think the way, because Bryce has always been, you know, vilified before, and him being so classy and how he handled this, you know, this post, you know, post-winning occasion, what do you feel about that?
Well, it's a classic action speak louder than words thing, yes. Right? Now, Rory has put a lot of words into the ether, for better or for worse, in the last 2 years. But now people have forgotten those words because you do, and you're going to string yourself to the action. His action was basically leaving that coarse tail between the legs. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I'm no sports psychologist, but I just think that it's so damning. And professional sport, the wild, swimming with sharks, you show weakness. You show a little blood in that water, everyone's going to pounce on you. So Rory's got big scar tissue now, yeah? Mm-hmm. 10 years without a major. Yeah, he's come close. I mean, Oaks, there's obnoxious fans out there who are putting Proteus emblems onto his shirt. And when you start getting memed in sports, the road back's longer than usual, huh?
It's going to be super long for Rory.
It's going to be super tough.
And I had him and as my number two. Yes, I did.
No, look, Rory,
that was a good golf call, guys, and I won't make a lot of them, but I made a great one.
Look, Rory should have won, and people are saying that Rory lost rather than Bryson wins. But
That's a terrible call, man.
I mean, I always find this a bit of a wanky call because it's like someone tries to sound intelligent and they say that. But ultimately, the US Open's tough. You know, people said like Bryson was won over for the last five. You should have beaten that. Mm. But on that golf course, all bets are off. We're so used to pros having plus or minus 15 to 20 to win. And that's not how US Open rolls. And they pride themselves on that. So one last thing about golf, which we need to talk about, is that I know Bryson's like the be-all, end-all right now. Everybody loves him. But because he went to live, he got snubbed for the Ryder Cup.
Yep.
And now he's snubbed for the Olympic American team. Now, the American team is Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Colin Morikawa, and Xander Schauffele. So that's basically, obviously, based on rankings and systems. But Wyndham Clark has lost the plot US Open champion.
And I don't want to cut you on that one, because obviously everybody now has watched Full Swing and their last call for the Ryder Cup. Is it really still an old boys club where, you know, me and my mates are going to go play for Team USA? Because, you know, coming off the last Ryder Cup, you think they'd go with the best for the Olympic team. You know, me and you have been discussing that. So what is your actual opinion on, like, that Olympic team as is coming off that Ryder Cup, you know, L, as I would call it?
So the thing about the Olympic team is it's a lot more clinical. It's a pure ratings kind of thing. Scottie Scheffler's number one by a mile. Wyndham Clark is up there in the points, but he's been pretty useless since then. Colin Morikawa has been quite solid, but he's not winning. He's not contesting, you know. And Scheffler won the USPJ champ, so he's there. I just think it's like, just for the PR aspect of this as well, to take a US Open champ to represent Team USA at the Olympics. Like, it's cool, but I mean, these things are set in stone. I think more to your question about the old boys club is that Ryder Cups can sometimes fall into that. Yep. Now, Zach Johnson, who is about as charismatic as the book on the bottom there, which we're hiding, he chose people that he thought would gel together in his opinion. Yep. So he took people I didn't think were great for that. Yep. When you go to the Ryder Cup and you need to go away, it's kind of like in junior school when skill levels haven't quite got to a position yet. You need intimidating guys to be on your football team, your rugby team, or your cricket team. You feel better knowing that a guy can bowl fast against lighties. Yep. And Ryder Cup's about aggression. Yep. It's about intimidation. It's about presence. So when you go to Ryder Cup and you don't have someone like Bryson who's going to go after people, he's going to give it his all, I just think that's stupid. Yeah. You've got to put differences aside here.
Yeah, missed opportunity.
And I think the more that people become so endeared towards Bryson again, they're going to realize, like, we can't actually snub the live guys at all because Bryson is like the sport.
Yep.
And I keep saying this, and we mentioned Tiger last week, and I mean him no ill by this, but he shouldn't be there anymore. He's not there as a player. So golf needs that sort of like real needle pusher, as they say.
I agree with you.
Bryson. It's Bryson all there. And I'm not going to fight that.
Crazy.
As you can tell.
That was a great golf segment. I enjoyed that for myself. Should I move on to this?
Well, you know what? Let's go straight to the NBA finals, because I know it's a very short part of the show.
Oh, God.
The Mavericks came back with a huge scoreline over the weekend. No one really saw that coming, but then reality check came back pretty quick.
I know this is my humble pie segment, so I have to look straight into this camera and give all Boston Celtics fans A big congratulations. You are now the most winningest franchise in NBA history with your 18 championships. It breaks my heart to say that. Magic Johnson even dropped a tweet saying he cannot believe that the Boston Celtics are now the greatest, most winningest franchise. Everybody who supports Boston, I know you've been waiting for me on the timeline. Congratulations. But a big congratulations to Jaylen Brown. He was always regarded as the number two, you know, in that team over Jason Tatum. And he actually won Eastern Conference Finals MVP and then backed it up to win the overall MVP in the playoffs. I think for Luka Doncic, there is a lot of learnings that he has to take out of this. He has to get better at defense. Unfortunately, the lights are on him now, and that's the difference between a number two and a champion. You have to be great on both sides of the ball, but, you know, Boston Celtics played really well. This is like the eighth time in 10 years they've been to a final. So it was just a matter of time. I have no ill words. My heart breaks. But congratulations to the Boston Celtics.
Just out of interest, who's your team?
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Okay, so I know this for future seasons.
Yes.
What happened to them this season? Why weren't they there?
Oh, we just played terribly. There's a lot happening with my franchise right now. You know, LeBron James is the aging superstar. He turns 40 this year. Do we move on? My front office needs a coach.
Hang a second, 40. So LeBron, Pepe, James.
Yeah, LeBron, Pepe, James. Yeah, so they just had a terrible, terrible season. But actually, outside of that, I think what was awesome is that, you know, NBA Africa got to, you know, bring us down to watch, you know, the finals. It happened at the Galleria and Sandton and a couple of other places around Africa. So that was such a dope advertising for you know, the game locally. So yeah, it was an awesome weekend. You know, that's the game where Dallas blew them out. And yeah, it was an awesome production and it was great.
So we'll get into this obviously closer to the time.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big basketball fan,
cool,
but I do like it when it's at the Olympics. How, I mean, and if, again, from an outward perspective, we don't follow the game, you think the USA team rocks up at the Olympics and gets gold. Is that kind of the case? Do you feel like it's going to be the case this time?
So historically, you know, they will only bring in their best players when they've been beaten. So they lost at the World Champs. So now every favorite American basketball player is going to Team USA, even some that aren't really American. Joel Embiid has now bought in. He says, I'm going to play for Team USA. And they've bought in their, you know, their heavy guns. But basketball has now become so diverse and it's one of the biggest growing sports in the world. You know, so the last three finals, the last three MVPs in the NBA have been all European. The game has grown so big. Team Canada got a great team. Luka Doncic, you know, they've got a great team. So it's going to be a proper showcase of talent. And it's exciting times for basketball. You know, EuroLeague was, you know, amazing. Panathinaikos, and always flips me off, just won the EuroLeague. So basketball at the Olympics is going to be such a big thing. And both, you know, the female game and, you know, the men's game is going to be, you know, awesome.
Awesome. So we need to move on to the UFC. So, you know, this is a story that happened a lot late last week. Now, Conor McGregor hasn't fought in 3 years. And when last time he fought, he snapped his leg on Dustin Poirier. And then we felt like he was gone. Now, he kind of pulled a bit of an Adele times 10 because he absolutely took a lot of steroids, okay? Because now he suddenly became huge. And again, memeable character. He was then in a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal. And the Oak's been a real sideshow. The thing is, he's still the biggest name in the sport. Well, I always say John Jones is the biggest because he's the greatest, but McGregor brings a lot of bums on seats.
Yep.
He got a lot of people to get into UFC, and I was kind of on that wave, you know, when McGregor became a big deal, Jorge Masvidal used content to really become a big deal, and of course, Dricus du Plessis coming into the UFC. So those three fighters for me were instrumental in me becoming a massive MMA fan. So in recent times, Conor McGregor has to come back and fight somebody. Now, Michael Chandler, who came from Bellator, really great guy, incredibly exciting fighter. He was pitched to now fight McGregor. It made so much sense.
I've got some deep fighting words for you in Conor, but let's go.
You know, that fight, McGregor versus Chandler, made so much sense because Chandler had title shots. He was up at the top, but, you know, he was on the way down because I think he is 35, 36 years old. We know McGregor's past his prime, but people still like watching him fight, and he's still kind of in the mix. So those two got squared off. They went on to the Ultimate Fighter reality show. So that's, if you don't know the sport very well, that actually saved the sport back in the day. And it puts two people as like team captains, and then they have a team of fighters that they mentor, and they all fight. And then obviously the winners, the team captains, then fight after the series. So now it just keeps getting delayed, this fight. But Michael Chandler, of course, they want to fight Conor because also the biggest payday in the sport. Pay-per-view money, you're going to make huge money. Like, it's just incredible. This poor guy is now to wait and wait and wait. UFC 303, 30th of June, I think it was, end of June, it is set. No, he's pulled out now. Undisclosed injury. No one knows what the severity of it is. But ultimately, this card was all about this fight, and now it's done. If Dana White had any hair, it would have gone this last week. That's probably why he's completely committed bald.
Yeah.
But that's done here. That card has now fallen to pieces. So Alex Pereira, who has now become stalwart of the UFC.
That's the fourth time.
But he is.
Yeah.
This dude is now saving this card, but it's in a fight that nobody really wants to watch. He's fighting Jiří Prochazka, okay? Who's that crazy Czechoslovakian oak, Croatian European oak who lives in a cabin, and he's like a monk slash ninja slash sensei. Yeah. This oak's a born warrior. But when Pereira fought him, he beat him. And no one was like, can't wait to see the rematch of that. But that's what 303 is now pinned on.
Yeah. He's butchered. And I wanted to go back with Conor, and I think...
Please do.
You know, as people who weren't naturally, you know, UFC fans, he brought in a lot of people into UFC. And he's become a little bit of a side joke now in the game. He's become,
it is sad, yeah.
It's sad. It's going to probably touch into me and Mike Tyson when we talk about that segment. But the thing with Conor is a weak media statement that he came out with. He said, oh, he wants to be, you know, in the best shape of his life. And, you know, my fans need to see me at the best.
Steroids help you with that, by the way.
Another thing is that, and I want to say this properly, we've never seen Conor back at his prime since he snapped his leg. You know, we've watched all the documentaries. That prime is over.
I mean, ultimately, we haven't seen him at his prime since he lost to Floyd Mayweather as a boxer. Because exactly. Let's be honest, if we're really critical here, when he lost to Khabib, and some of his best punches were thrown after the fight against Khabib's teammates,
exactly.
He's been on the downward spiral.
Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of things that Conor has also done before this fight that lets me know this is not a pure just injury issue. We saw him in Saudi Arabia trying to get into another boxing fight with Manny Pacquiao. He's consistently in every nightclub in the world.
Shout out, Joling.
He's now an actor. This is no longer a priority. And, you know, I think Michael needs to let go of this fight. And the big problem for Conor, and it's my prediction, is once Michael gets over this fight, I think Conor got to walk into retirement, because then nobody really is going to be, you know, want to fight Conor. Yes, the purse is important, but he now owes the UFC a ton of money for dropping them at this level. We all know this fight is not going to happen by 2024, so Conor is not going to fight this year.
Well, actually, so this is where news has surfaced in the last couple of days, is that because he's talking about an unspecified injury, which is just a nice way of saying, I'm not into this.
Yeah, exactly.
People are saying it could turn around. Now, Errol Hawani is a guy that isn't very much liked by the UFC, but I think he's a pretty good journalist in that space because that's been his gig for a while now. Mm. He said this fight could take place August, September. So now, I totally agree with you. Chandler must walk away from this.
100%.
And the UFC have said, obviously, they'll give him whatever he wants going forward, because the guy's been sitting on the sidelines, I think November 2022, when he lost to Dustin Poirier.
And this is the second time this fight's moved, right?
Yeah. It's constantly been delayed. He went through the whole tough series. So Michael Chandler should walk away, but the character is so big, and yet it's still so close because it might happen in September, August. So now if you're thinking September, August, I've waited 2 years, I can wait another 2 months. But this poor guy, it's this endless heartbreak, and I think he needs it because, again, this could be his last fight.
Yeah, it's. I think Conor got to call it, and I hate to say it because he's such a draw card.
It's another Tiger situation.
It's a Tiger situation. It's a Mike Tyson situation. Just call it, let the UFC progress. And there's so much excitement around the UFC now. I think we can now get some new faces of it. And also, to be honest, he's not committed to it. And I think he's letting down a lot of, you know, us Conor friends. And it's also okay for you to be a boxer outside of your prime. And we can just move on from that. So Conor, that's all I want to say.
Look, I think, and again, I think a lot of fans aren't going to be too sad about that. The true fans aren't going to care about him going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. It's just a shame because that card needed that fight. Mm. And no disrespect to Pereira and Prochazka, particular Pereira, because he is, I think, that guy will go down as a goat where he's going. Stone hands, light heavyweight division. I can't see anyone beating him until he goes past his prime.
Yeah.
But so next week, we're going to get into this quite a lot, okay? UFC 305. Because the thing is, like, if you unchain me with MMA fighting, it'll be an hour and
yeah.
we're done.
Yeah.
So UFC 305, I'm so excited about this because, you know, the whole fight everybody wants to see for quite some time now has been Drickus versus Adesanya.
Exactly.
And it's happening. And again, the stars are aligning for this to be an absolute blockbuster.
It's going to be. I think it's going to be probably one of, because we watched the Drickus win the title.
Yeah.
We all woke up in the morning and did that. For South Africa, he's such a huge, you know.
Oh, yes.
You know, he's up there. But this is the fight that we all wanted to see. Yes, it couldn't be in Joburg at FNB Stadium. But this is the biggest fight. And I know they have to have a rematch. This is going to be exciting. This is blockbuster stuff. This is you waking up with your friends and going to go watch, you know, this fight. This is going to be a fight that we talk about for a very long time moving forward.
Yeah.
Just because it's, you know, aligning of everybody in their prime, you know, prime-ish. But you understand what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But spoiler alert, UFC Africa is never going to happen. Sorry, guys.
Let's not put that into the universe.
Sorry.
Put it into the universe.
I want it to happen more than anybody, okay? Yeah. But rands and cents or dollars and pennies, however you want to describe it, the UFC is not going to make it happen, unfortunately. We've got to wrap up fighting about the sideshows.
Got you.
We didn't get it this last week, but the Jake Paul Tyson fight, it was meant to be scheduled for July. It's now been pushed to November. This is a sideshow, right? It's not just me who thinks this. It's a joke. It shouldn't happen.
Mike Tyson, and look, guys, I'm 34 years old. I got to see Mike Tyson, and he's a true heavyweight killer, a true legend of boxing and fighting. It is so, you know, it upsets me when, you know, a competitor never knows when to let it go, you know? And he's 59. The reason the fight got moved is because he's 59 years old and had an ulcer attack. He walks on a stick, guys. If that fight gets sanctioned again, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be so sad to watch Mike Tyson go through that.
It's really sad. I mean, Mike Tyson is one of the baddest men to ever walk the planet.
Exactly.
I'm talking from back in the day when you had to beat a woman over the head and skin the Neanderthal from his coat.
Exactly.
Mike Tyson's up there with hardcore.
Yeah.
But he's 59 in November. So I don't care what he is. I don't care if you stem cell the dude to death or if he's in cryogenic freezing. What? 59.
With vibranium, whichever one you want to do.
It's never a good look socially in bars. It sure as hell is not a good look in professional sports. You can't have a young guy in his prime fighting a guy who's that old. I don't care who you are. I don't care if Tyson walks to the ring with tigers either side of him. Yeah. He's 59.
And also, like, you know, just going back onto that, when he fought Roy Jones, it was an exhibition fight.
Yes.
I mean, he's going against, he's
an old,
59.
All these exhibition fights.
He's 59. Jake Paul's 27. I mean, like, it makes no sense. And I think now they're actually in a lot more trouble because they've moved the fight so many times. Netflix wants their money. They've committed to November 15th. I actually think this fight doesn't happen because somebody's going to go to, you know, Mike Tyson and say, this is bad for business. We can't do it.
Nobody wins.
Yep.
But producer James just told me that the original date for Tyson versus Paul is now being replaced with Mike Perry. Now, if you don't know who Mike Perry is, an absolute fucking write-off of a character. There's no other way to describe this guy. He was in the UFC, and he would win a fight and basically claim poverty and how, like, he needs money because he's got ex-girlfriends and, like, ex-wives. He's got alimony he's got to pay. The guy can't get to training. Eventually, he fell out of the UFC to his natural place, which is bare-knuckle fighting.
That is absolutely insane.
He's been good at bare-knuckle boxing. He's not all there in the head. This is the kind of guy that Jake Paul needs to be fighting. I'm so happy about this. This is a fight that makes sense. It's a sideshow that is actually a main show. I'm all for this. Great news.
I really, and it's sad. It's not sad. I really could care less about that guy from Disney Channel. And I know that's a harsh thing to say. He's just, you know, and that's a, I get the marketing of a YouTube sensation coming to do that. You know, people like KSI have done it. But there's something very lame about, you know, what he is doing. And I hate to say that.
Okay.
Something very lame. And if Mike Tyson gets into that ring, I hope he does what Anthony Joshua did to that guy from the UFC and just beat the
Francis
brakes.
Ngannou.
Yeah, and just beat the brakes off of him. And we all want to see that if this fight happens.
Well, you've just nailed the Jake Paul business model.
Yeah.
People want to see you lose.
Yeah.
And that's why he sells.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to see him lose. I don't want to see him win. What we do have to get into is talking about the Proteas.
Let's do it.
Now, I know you love talking about the Proteas. That's why I've allowed you to build up a bit of momentum here. We've got the other sports.
Yeah.
We've taken some quick singles.
Yep.
SA versus Nepal. Now, when I went onto Superbets last week, I had a look. Like, what's the market on this? I think it was 14.75, okay? So that's when you know you're not an underdog. You're not even on the table. 14.75 is what the Nepal team was going to would get you for a win. Mm. You wouldn't even look at it. Laugh it off. They won by one run, the Proteas. They won by one run. There was a stage where I think Nepal needed 31 from 38 with wickets in hand. Now, this was taking place in the very early hours of the morning, so nobody was really watching this. But they could have actually coasted to victory. That's how bad it was.
Oh, Proteas. I think the Proteas are just doing this for ratings. They cannot do this to us every game.
Sorry, can I just preface that by saying the unbeaten Proteas?
Yes, they're unbeaten. But gosh, our heart rates. What happened to being clinical? I have to take the good with the bad. The Proteas are undefeated. And, you know, that's what I've got to take out of this. You've got to win what's in front of you. But my gosh, that Nepal game. We actually, same thing as the Bangladesh game. We actually should have lost those two games.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have a great bowling team or a great batting team. I never know what I'm getting with the Proteas. I just hope for the best and hope they win. And, you know, we're going to the Super 8 and we, you know, after this Team USA would have already, we would have played and hopefully won against Team USA. But it should be concerning that we are never clinical. But maybe us not being clinical in this World Cup maybe means we win the World Cup.
Maybe it does. Okay, so there's four unbeaten teams going to Super 8s. Now, I've just got to kind of share with you, there's a slight lag between where we film the show and where it goes out. It's like 24 hours. And unfortunately, the smack bang in the middle of this now is the Proteas versus America. So Sandile can't get irate or begrudgingly happy about the result here. So we're just going to keep it moving, right? Yeah. Now, the Super 8's got four unbeaten teams. And the Proteas, yes, to their credit, they have been unbeaten. This tournament, we spoke about it last week. Tricky pitches, T20, the nature of T20 is already a bit of a lottery. Mm. And I think it's been great as a spectacle. So let's not maybe be too critical. But this is where the rubber meets the road on what you're about, right?
Great English for saying. Shout out.
This is where it happens because now in the Super 8s, the Proteas have to play a dominant West Indian team who just... also unbeaten,
yep.
Got through their group, playing at home, and absolutely annihilated Afghanistan, who beat New Zealand. Okay, New Zealand went out. Shout out Lockie Ferguson, 4/0/3, when it didn't matter. But now they play West Indies, and they play England, and they play USA. Mm. So I think now with these three games, we'll know what's up with this team. And I'm going to say quietly confident, because I prefer saying that to being, I don't have the stomach to watch them.
I don't even want to say anything. I will take it as it comes.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Okay. So the Super 8s, we've got an interesting weekend for the Super 8s. Yep. Okay. So Friday, Australia versus Bangladesh. Australia, again, they're just looking like Australia. You know what you're going to get from them. They're explosive. They're decent. But there might be, you know, a little giveaway here or there. Mm. We play England Friday. So that'll be a 4:30 game. That's a great way to start the weekend. Eh?
That's a tricky game for us.
United States, West Indies Saturday. England, Bangladesh Saturday. And then it goes Afghanistan, Australia. England, America. West Indies, SA. So we got that last game's huge.
It's going to be electric.
Then Australia, India, Afghanistan, Bangladesh. That wraps up the Super 8s by Tuesday the 25th. So look, we need to finish top two in our group of four. When it comes down to it, you want to win a tournament, you got to win every single game.
Exactly.
Starting with the USA, England, West Indies. I'm excited. I'm just going to leave it at that. Because I want to be positive.
Yeah, that's, you know.
I think it was by 2024 New Year's resolution.
Yes, please. That's, you know, I want us to be positive. But what's so interesting about, you know, this T20, we've got two former champions who went out. We got Pakistan who went out miserably. They've got to go finish, you know, they've got to go deal with what's going on with them. The bridesmaid who was in New Zealand always, you know, they went crashed out.
But I looked at the New Zealand team. It's a good team.
Exactly.
They've got good fast bowlers. They've got spinners, good spinners. Yeah. They've got great batsmen.
Yeah.
Gone. Done.
Yeah, so it is, you know, Sri Lanka, you know, we've spoken about them in depth. So I think there is a changing in, you know, the hierarchy of, you know, T20 cricket. Because I don't think, you know, the Bangladesh-Australia game is, you know, finished. You know, Bangladesh will carry you, you know, to 20 overs. And I think, you know, Bangladesh will give us some surprises. I mean, Afghanistan to go through as well. You know, that's... No, it's a big call as well. So I think it's, you know, it's an exciting time for cricket as well.
It is. So as you can see with me shivering in this jersey.
Oh, let's do it.
I mean, I'm so close to putting a jacket on actually. But hey, I'm going to keep going because I've got to honour the Bulls. I've got to honour them. Going into last week, you know, obviously we finished the show off every single week with our calls for Superbets. and I was pretty confident. I mean, I didn't want to make the call, but I just saw it being a full Irish final. But the way the Bulls came out, and the thing is, what I loved about that Bulls game the most is that they beat that Leinster team the same way the Bucks are going to beat the Irish team when that happens. They were physical. They were exciting. They backed themselves. They played with so much heart. And that Leinster team, star-studded across the way. And you know, people keep saying, like, South African teams don't, or South African rugby public doesn't quite know how amazing Leinster is, because they've only, they've only really started picking up on European football in the last few, European rugby in the last few seasons. So they got there, and Jake White was saying, you know, overwhelming underdogs. He was saying all the right things. And they actually were. You know,
they were.
But Sergil Pederson, cheap as that guy at a game, man. He got a yellow card earlier in the piece, came back to score that decisive try. It was just great to watch. That Bulls loose trio, incredible. A guy like Marcel Kutsia, amazing player. He's not playing in that team.
And just that team pushes through. So for me, and I owe all the Blue Bulls fans a huge apology, I should have never doubted Jake White. I don't know why I even put that into the universe. I owe everybody a huge apology to that. That is the GOAT. For me, Blue Bulls mentality, next man up mentality. Doesn't matter if our stars are out. Let's go up there and let's go beat the hell out of those guys. I was so shocked at that. I mean, me and you both said, it's not going to be close. They played great rugby throughout.
And it was a flattering scoreline in the end for Leinster, actually.
Yep.
The Bulls had a disallowed try, which was here or there.
Yep.
And it was very flattering towards the end. So what does this mean now for the final? Because Glasgow similarly went to Munster, and massive underdogs, to the point, I mean, we all saw that that billboard. Munster was already advertising the final against the Bulls. Shout out, arrogance.
Shout out.
And Franco Smith, the Glasgow Warriors coach, said, we saw that, and it fired us up. Like, how stupid can you be?
Oh, but they lost that game on pure ill-discipline. You don't give away a red card with 12 minutes left when you're still in that fight. So we've got two underdogs in the final. I think Jake White might take it.
So we've got two underdogs in the final, but what we've also got are the two best attacking teams in the URC. So tries scored, points scored, thereabouts. If you want to go into like line breaks and all those kind of things, meters run, these are the two best teams to watch.
Yeah,
I think there's some fascinating showdowns here. Is that the Bulls showed last week that their forward pack's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty dominant. And they will try attack you with that, and they'll definitely defend those channels. Glasgow Warriors, they're very good up the middle in the centers. They've got some absolute behemoths that can run the ball. And they've just, like I said, they're probably, I think they're most meters gained running this whole season. It's a great team. This match happened about a month ago at Loftus. The Bulls won that one. They were ahead by quite some distance. Glasgow Warriors came back strong. I think they ended up losing by four in the end, or six. It was close.
I want to ask you, what does this mean for Leinster once again? It feels like the C word. And I think I've got to, you know, we spoke about this last week. We said, there's no way Leinster can lose this game coming off losing another final.
Yeah, exactly. Look, it was a bit of a tough weekend for Irish people all around when it came to breathing properly.
Oh, and it's about to be a long, long, long week for you guys moving on.
You know, another thing that's interesting about the aftermath of this URC defeat for them is that then the Irish team was announced to come play the box. And I looked at the comments. Now, normally when teams get announced, you'll always have like the irate people saying, why is this person there? Not in the Springboks. Sorry. Not in the Springboks recently, because our team is just full of merit and full of happiness. But the Irish team, they were like, why are these guys here? Why are they defaulting to these Leinster picks all the time?
18 players from the Leinster.
So when you look at that squad, I looked through the comments. Irish people are not happy. These guys are living on reputation and they're not performing. Mm-hmm. So they didn't perform. They didn't get a World Cup. They didn't get a semi in a World Cup. Let's leave those jokes for last year.
Yep.
But now a Leinster team comes here, doesn't win, and now they're coming back to play for Ireland. I think if you look at the Irish team that's coming out for this tour, Jamison Gibson Park, is that how I say his name?
Yep. It's just Jamison Gibson Park.
The moment you're hyphenated, I kind of lose concentration towards the end. He's not coming to South Africa on the tour.
Preparing for Olympics, right?
No, he's got a hamstring injury.
Oh, hectic.
So hamstring injury, he's out. He's the massive talisman for that team.
And Hugo Keenan as well.
Yeah. But you know, Gibson Park, they generally say that DuPont's the best rugby player in the world, but he is the best scrum off in the world.
Apparently.
And you watch him, like, he's dynamic. Yeah. And the team needs that because you don't have Johnny Sexton.
Exactly.
So now this Irish team is coming out here to play the box at home without the 9-10 that they've had so much success. Johnny Sexton, stalwart.
Another one. Stalwart. No, another one. That one I can agree with you. That's a stalwart.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Irish team is coming out with some people who don't know a lot of success in the last year. Let's be honest. I mean, it's cool. Six Nations, credit. But there's going to be some doubts here.
Yeah. So I think with the Ireland team, and also we've got to be kind of kind to them. They've got 5 million people. I think Mlazi got more people than Ireland does, you know. I think for me, the big, you know, omission from that team is Ross Byrne. And, you know, one to watch for, because he kind of has to have a big performance, is Craig Casey. But, you know, 5 million people, a lot of injuries, and a big transition for the Ireland squad. You know, the team that they built for the World Cup, it's not going to be the same team that comes down, you know. Yeah. So they've had to back Leinster because that's their marquee team. I'm surprised that it was 18, especially coming off 2 losses in the finals. I know you know, they could have won, you know, and it would have been a different, you know, narrative, but it feels like a loser narrative moving into this big test. And yeah, I don't want to call it, but I think we're going to give them that work, as I would say.
Yeah.
But big issue of depth.
And they should have it. So speaking about depth and issue, we might as well go straight into the Springbok team against Wales. No, I'm excited about this team. Okay, yeah. I wanted to see a few guys in the team that aren't there. Yeah. I won't get into that because, I mean, they'll all get their chance. I don't want to go against the selection here. But if you look at this Bok team, damn, it's exciting. Yeah? It's exciting because you've got the structures. You've got the people. I mean, Ibn Etzebeth, 119 test caps. The Welsh forward pack, 118 test caps.
It's going to be a long day for Wales.
It's great. It's great to see that we've got this. But then we can also then blood talent like Jordan Hendricks are coming in off like debutant. Edwill van der Merwe, debutant, coming in. This is so exciting. We've got great guys on the bench. We've got URC form being rewarded.
Yes.
We've got our guys who we know what they can do. Peter Steps-Attoy, ever since he said 2 words in the Chasing the Sun episode, captain's armband. Of course, Cyril Kalisi is still playing French club rugby.
Yep.
It's outside the international window. Yep. And then Evan Roos comes in as well. Not that we don't have 27 other great number eights.
In the world. Can you imagine?
This team is so damn exciting. It really, really is.
Yeah. I think for me, what's crazy is that there's so much talent that's not coming down.
Yeah.
So I was just looking through, you know, the front pack. You got Oxenchair, Malcolm Marx, Vincent Koch, Ibn Etzebeth, you know, Franco Mosta. That is your second string.
Yeah.
Then walk into any national team and win another World Cup. And then captain, obviously. And, you know, Rossi always said something about the captain, that it's going to start changing as we move forward. I love Peter Steps-Attoy just off that World Cup final, what he meant and all that tackling. They're going to run out and play for him. But I think for me, what's exciting with also bringing a new coaching staff, you know, with Tony Brown.
That's our man. Tony Brown. Who knows SA, huh? He's not just this guy that they plucked out because he was a Kiwi. Exactly. He played for the Sharks.
Exactly.
Played for the Sharks with embarrassing gloves on his hands.
And what's...
we know him.
So what's actually going to happen, because we keep on talking about the rule change. So what's happening is that we're going to put in more gas into our team.
Yeah.
So putting in Jordan with a veteran squad. And I really love that, because then he won't suffer. You know, he'll make his mistakes, but he will be covered by Jesse Creel next to him, Faf, and then his mistakes won't be so exposed. And that's just keep on adding into, you know, the chain of the Springboks. Because as we're saying, this is a second string Springbok squad. But they are the best depth, you know, that we've ever seen, you know, that's moving forward. And we've got to get into bringing in new fresh talent. If this is the second string squad that we're going to bring, the depth in SA rugby is absolutely insane.
It really is. So much so that I think the terms like second string and B teams doesn't get used that much, because we know that we are a squad of 30 guys that get rotated a little bit.
Yep.
I know you get your match day 23,
yeah,
but ultimately we've probably got 30 incumbent Boks, and that's the way we kind of look at it like this. So yeah, that game will be taking place before the URC final. So what a day.
What a sporting day.
What a day. I'm waking up on Saturday morning. I'm playing Royal Johannesburg East, easing into it. Probably a beer afterwards.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to Pretoria. I'm going to watch.
Are you going? You're going to the heart of rugby.
I'm going to go to the heart of rugby and Braaiplays. And I'm going to watch the Bok game in a nearby place. Haven't determined that yet.
Yeah.
And then I'll be at Loftus West Pavilion, not the US. I've spent time in the US Pavilion. Don't you look at me to say I'm not good enough for the stadium. I'll tell you what, I've done my time in that stadium. But we're going to go Grandstand West Side, watch the game.
It's going to be electrifying.
What a Saturday.
Oh, it's going
I mean,
to
this
be
is what you want as a sports fan, right?
Yeah.
And this is what we're lining up every single week now.
Mm.
Start the show with us. Start the weekend with us on the Thursday and just lap everything up from there.
So I want to say one last thing about this depth of the Springbok squad. Mampimpi is the only one in that back row that started in the World Cup and was in that World Cup team. So that is how crazy Him and Jesse Creel. Him and Jesse Creel.
And Faf.
So that's exciting. I got that wrong, but but I'll try to land the void.
Outside of Faf, Jesse Creel and my Pimpy. Great point.
Anyway. So yeah, so that's super exciting. I hope Sacha Ngomezulu gets a run. Feinberg Ngobezulu gets a run. Because he's super exciting as well, you know.
But best case scenario, where do you want to see him play?
I don't know.
I don't want him to be another Ruan Pienaar. But then again, these guys are so interchangeable nowadays, and the game plan of the Springboks, maybe that's the thing of the past where you can be so precious.
Yeah, so I just want him to get a run because I think he's, you know, he's been one of the most electric, and he's probably going to be a generational talent moving forward.
I also want him to get a bot cap so England don't buy him. Because you know England are going to do that. Ultimately what happens, right? They go, you guys have a lot of talent, we don't.
Can we get one or two? Nah, so I really hope for him, you know, he gets a run. And also shout out to Apelele Fas, you know, I think he's also well-deserved.
World class,
and I'm excited for him. Once again, depth of the Springboks, incredible.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up on the section here with Formula One because they're going to the Circuit de Barcelona, Catalonia.
You got it right.
Yeah, okay, I've got to have notes for these kind of things.
Yeah.
What makes the Spanish Grand Prix so incredible this weekend? Well, first and foremost, it's the 10th race of the season. So we're kind of at that really pivotal moment where if you're going to make a run on Red Bull, this is one of the races you have to do it.
Yep.
It's the start of 3 weeks in a row now in Europe. So, I mean, this is it. Like, we've had the big travels and the breaks. No. This little three-week period for F1 is so crucial. Red Bull this year aren't, like, far away, okay? Now, unfortunately, in Canada, Ferrari were terrible. Didn't finish, and that really hurt them in the constructors because they're not too far away from Red Bull there. Charles Leclerc is still pushing Verstappen for the overall drivers as well. So they're still kind of in touching distance where a couple of races where Red Bull might falter is anyone's kind of race. Cool. I'll say anyone's kind of race. It's them and McLaren. Mercedes, not so much.
Yeah.
McLaren have been consistently the quickest car, most dependable car out there. I think Lando Norris is the only guy that scored every race, points in every single race.
Yep.
So this race brings all that together. And I tell you what else about this Spanish Grand Prix. Everyone knows this course because everyone's been testing this course. It's on the circuit every single year. Yep. People will say, like, you know, Red Bull are going to have an advantage, but every team has every right to feel confident on this track this weekend.
I love the consistency of Lando Norris. Sorry, I didn't know you were done yet.
No, sorry. I realized
he's dead in the eye.
I realized that. I was like, you're talking far too much about F1 here.
No, I think, as you said, you know, it's a little bit closer. I think, you know, everybody thought Max was going to go through, you know, just run through the season, but Lando has been such a great competitor. I'm so sad to see, like, and I hate it, but Mercedes have just decided to collapse everything. They've decided to, you know, my big highlight on our F1 thing was, we know that, you know, Lewis is leaving, but back your teammate. You know, you don't, you know, frustrate Lewis. He's still a GOAT. Give him that respect so he can transition into Ferrari in pure class, as we discussed it. But now I just feel like he's the enemy of the state, that, you know, at Mercedes. You know, so many times they snub him.
It's interesting you say enemy of the state. If you dig a bit on the internet, there's a few interesting threads I know on X in particular.
Yeah.
So Lewis has said in the last couple of seasons, he's told them about the car.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how F1 kind of works is that, you know, it's all about the car. You have a great car, a driver will make it happen on top of that. It's seldom the other way around. I think only back in the day, Schumacher could have driven that Benetton car.
And just been a winner.
Somehow he did that.
Yeah.
Lewis is always saying, like, the guys aren't listening to me. I'm telling them about the car. I know the car better than anybody. Toto Wolff then comes out and says, I think it's slightly overplayed how much input a driver has. Oof. And he actually even said it. It's a bigger loss that we're losing two engineers to Ferrari than it is to Lewis. Maybe not the exact same words, but his sentiments were about that. So that's what's been happening. Yeah. And you've seen sometimes when Lewis does podium, the team's not celebrating with him.
They're not.
It's like they've already said goodbye. There's animosity or they're just over each other. It's
such a weird place.
It is weird.
Yeah, it's for somebody, you know, who's carried that team through so many, you know, victories. So for it to end like this, it's kind of like a bad marriage.
It does suck a bit.
It sucks, but, you know, we move on. But, you know, Spanish, you know, should be exciting this weekend.
So just on one final part about Mercedes, they've got this new front wing, and we saw people are saying that if the Canadian Grand Prix, if there was no rain, Mercedes had the fastest car.
Yep.
So they're saying that now in the season, this new front wing is going to do wonders. If they can just stay on the track, they're going to be really good this weekend.
Key thing is them staying on the track.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, we never know what's going to happen. And so many people have, you know, trained on this track. So, you know, they might have an advantage, but it's going to be so slight. And it's all going to come down to tactics at the end of the day, you know. That is where I think the margin is going to be. And, you know, Max is going to be Max. He's going to be aggressive throughout. Let's see what happens, one, with Ferrari, because I've really got them as a strong number two coming into this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Lando as well for the consistency. You know, I think he's going to bode.
I would feel more comfortable about Lando. Ferrari, terrible history of bouncing back from bad things.
Yeah, as we know.
They are like, you know, in rugby, they say when you concede a point or a try, don't concede another one.
Yeah.
Ferrari just kicked the ball in their own goals quite a lot. And maybe this is them to test the character again.
Yeah.
So anyway, huge, very interesting kind of Grand Prix then. Again, like I said, it's the start of 3 weeks in a row now in Europe. Mm. So sometimes Grand Prix is a bit intermittent for your purist. Mm. 3 weeks in a row. We're going to come back after this with the big calls for this weekend. Now, we've got a lot of pride to just kind of salvage or reclaim here.
Yeah, we got so much. So we did not
cover ourselves in glory last week, but we're definitely going to make amends, I promise. Alrighty, into the weekend we go. And of course, that means making some big calls.
Yes, sir.
Last week, you know what? Last week's last week.
Yeah, we move forward.
Why must we allude to that at all?
We move forward and you're going to back us this week, I promise you.
So again, with Superbets this weekend, we got up to $5,000 in sign-on bonuses. So deposits gets matched, fun gets had. I mean, I'm very excited about this. So if you are new to playing, this is a very good time of the year to get into this. And Superbets is going to give you those amazing sort of initial bonuses. So I think I'm going to go first because I'm going to tee up because your calls are a bit more interesting than mine. So look, I'm going to play it safe-ish. Cool. Because these are the two games I'm going to watch the most. So therefore, I'm very, very invested here. We've got the Bucks versus Wales, and we've got the Bulls versus Glasgow Warriors. Right off the bat, we know who the favorites are, right? It's pretty clear. So what I want to do is I want to go Bulls and the Bucks both to be leading at halftime and full-time. Now, what that does is gives me 0.67. So $100 down, 167 back. I know I'm playing it safe here. Yeah, but the thing is,
safe.
I don't want to get burnt after last week. Last week, I was 0-3. I want to get back on track here, and I'm going for that because, yeah, I think both teams are going to start pretty well, and I feel obviously both teams are going to win. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think those odds are actually quite low. Yeah, I don't know, but I'm going to go Bucks and Bulls to lead halftime, full-time. Sandile, you've got four games that you want to go for, okay, yeah, in the Euros. You want to talk about Slovakia versus Ukraine, Poland, Austria, Netherlands, France, and Spain, Italy. How do you see those games playing out result-wise?
I have got Slovenia, Ukraine as a 1-1 draw. Okay. They've just been, you know, I think they're just going to balance each other out. Big calls for France versus Netherlands.
Yeah,
I've got France winning 3-1.
You reckon that much, huh?
I've got France versus 3-1. My big pick, because I have to, you know, redeem myself, is my Spain to defeat Italy 2-1. And yeah, then I've got Belgium winning 2-0 against Romania.
Okay, so Poland, Austria, you mentioned that, right?
Yes, Poland, Austria. I got Poland winning 2-1, the return of Lewandowski.
All right, okay, cool. So this is one of the other cool things about betting with Superbets. You go into those markets. So, you know, it all depends on how you really want to play this. You go to their markets, or like Sandile over here, he likes to be result-driven. So let's just say Slovakia, Ukraine. Let's just go with under 2.5 goals there, right?
Cool, yeah.
Because you got there 1-1. Poland, Austria, you're going to have Austria to win.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Poland, easy enough. Poland 2-1.
Sorry. Austria to win.
Poland.
Poland to win.
Poland to win 2-1.
Oh, okay, so that's where your little sneaky upset comes in there. Yeah. Okay, then we've got Netherlands, France. You're saying 3-1. So France. There you can go onto the market that says more than 2.5 goals.
Yeah.
And then you've got Spain, Italy. So let's go with the market of both teams scoring.
Right.
All right. That's why you get the more interesting calls, right? So now we're looking at like 11.45. Obviously, odds subject to change here, but 100 can get you like 11.45.
Yeah.
That's a decent return for not exactly the most outlandish calls.
Exactly.
Just tell me a little bit about this Poland-Austria comeback here. Do you think Lewandowski is going to be that much of an aspect?
Talisman, probably best, you know, striker that we've seen in recent history. I really am backing him. That's my big back of that weekend. And Spain, I'm going to back Spain for what I did to you guys last time. I've got them as 2-1. A lot of people in the studio are very happy that I said that. And it's also because Italy's got a leaky defense. So I think Spain is going to run around them. And France, look, I'm backing that French attack for that 3-1.
Okay. So if you are more adventurous than us, you can obviously bet on the Proteas. You can play in the Super 8s at the Cricket World Cup. We're not going to touch that business.
Yeah.
So superbets.co.za, of course, use the code OTB. Yeah. So on the bounce.
On the bounce.
On the bounce show. OTB will get those sign-up bonuses. That's it for us for this week. Next week, we've got an incredible show, which you'll hear more about on social media.
Can't wait.
But follow us on all our channels. Shout out all our channels. Both of us, the channel, the show, everything.
That's us.
And that wraps up week number two.
Yeah, boo.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful sporting weekend. We'll catch you back soon.
Cheers.